Good evening, dear listeners, and welcome to The Dreaming Prophet. Tonight, we're covering the underrepresented, the downtrodden, the oft-forgotten stars of Red Acre, the human residents. Because while we often focus on the voices in our head, it's important to pay a little mind to the flesh that carries them around, too. Humanity is a beautiful thing, and Red Acre is dressed up in every hue that humans have to offer. But remember, the most important hue of all is red. So if you close your eyes, take a breath, and step right through this red door. My name is Lavanya.
I'm Astro.
And I'm Xavier.
This is a Blackout Club show for Blackout Club players with minimal speculation, all lore, and a focus on the known facts. Our topic of the day is the human characters of Red Acre.
To start us off, our spoiler warning for today is, as always, The Dreaming Prophet is not spoiler free. We are not regulated by the FDA, so our information is full of the contamination of possibly undesirable knowledge. Be forewarned. Our content warnings for tonight are mention of child abduction, implication of child abuse, misgendering and implied transphobia, and a whole fuck ton of shitty families. So to start us off, we're going to discuss the role of human NPCs in the story of the Blackout Club. Most of the story is told about and through the daemons, both as characters and as plot devices. Throughout the live run of the Blackout Club, we have learned a lot about daemon behavior, daemon politics, daemon history. Everything that you can know about a daemon, we have dug out, enrolled in. But the daemons are a little self-absorbed in their more abstract concepts in a lot of ways than they are necessarily characters.
You say that we learned everything there is to learn about daemons, but do they know why the kids love Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
It's because they're possessing us and they make us!
The daemons talk like humans, can act like humans, and present themselves as sympathetic or antagonistic. The fact that they aren't human can be a hindrance sometimes to player relatability.
Human NPCs, on the other hand, can provide a players a more relatable perspective on the daemons. We play as human characters, hopefully, and we aren't daemons, we're their pawns. And many of them talk as if they're better than us and are actively trying to control us. How do we feel about that? As we reach the end game of the Blackout Club, we're finding out more and more about how various other characters feel.
So to start us off, we're going to discuss the Blackout Club itself, that fascinating Babysitter's Club-esque analogy. But, you know, unfortunately, none of our children are getting paid.
We also don't get a cool telephone or anything.
The Blackout Club are the primary characters who speak to the player characters. This is the organization that everyone is a part of, for better or worse.
In-game missions come from the Blackout Club, and they are the most common form of text interaction at this point. In addition to the PCs, the Blackout Club's members also include Bells, or Isabella Maddie Shaw.
As a little background, Null stated in June 25th of 2019 that by the start of the game, Bells would be 17 years old. Bells is the point of view character in the prologue. She explains the game's setting to us, as well as the basic premise in some of the characters that the PCs will later encounter and interact with.
She is the daughter of Bryson Shaw and Zaina Maddie Shaw. She was the founder of the Blackout Club and one of the few children actively interested in pursuing the truth, no matter the cost. This viewpoint led her to break into Zaina's workplace, enter into saturation control, and release something that we are still not clear on.
Bells goes missing at the end of the prologue, and the live run's plot has primarily been focused on trying to find her and discover what exactly happened. As of July 18, 2020, Bells has reappeared as a formless voice that speaks to PCs while they are out on missions. She says that she's in saturation control, and conveniently, she just isn't sure how to escape. But she has tried to help others leave it. The voices can't find her. The other club members have tried their best to verify the authenticity of her, and unfortunately, while it's been to Gwyn's satisfaction, it has not quite been to Dax's.
Speaking of Dax, he's another one of the OGs of the Blackout Club. He's known to be older than the player characters, but the exact extent of that age is unknown right now. He first appears at the end of the prologue arguing with Gwyn, and he's one of the people who you can usually meet texting underneath the Blackout Club HQ moniker.
We know relatively little about Dax as a person, but the things we do know are absolutely fascinating. He has multiple sisters, to the point that he claims he can't even remember how many he has. Is this true? Is this a lie? That's up to you, dear listeners. When he appeared in an early video of the Blackout Club in testing, he had one of the lighter skin tones. His ethnicity isn't known, but it is known in the subtitles of the prologue. He was called Daxton. One of the things that we do know about Dax is that he's known for being technically savvy. He created the drone from the drone retrieval mission, and he works with Gwyn to decipher the cryptograms that are found within the maze. He and Gwyn also created the system that allows TBC to send out messages safely.
Per Null, quote, Gwyn and Dax found a way to jailbreak them, send messages and images privately. They're then transferred off to some old hard drives they raided from somewhere, messages deleted as soon as they can, in case the phone is confiscated, end quote.
When asked about personalities, Null noted that, quote, Dax is largely typing to himself, end quote, and has also referred to him as being chaotic. Dax also trusts the voices even less than Gwyn does.
Dax and Bell stumbled upon a relic the community calls the Duolith. Two stones carved like the speak as one symbol. They called it the Haunted Armpit.
Bell said to players, quote, We heard the sound, this creepy sound by the cliffside swings. It sounded like it was coming from the cliff, maybe, and we wanted to investigate it. We wanted to find out. We got climbing equipment, and I remember almost falling. And then Dax fell, but I caught him. I caught him, and he told me that he owed me a life debt, and we got to the bottom. We found a cave. It looked like an armpit, and inside there were two standing stones with holes cut through near the top, and it made a round shape. And the wind would whistle through it, and it would sound like that cry we had heard. And we called it the Haunted Armpit, and we didn't tell anyone, not even Gwyn. It seemed like it was evidence of much older people passing through the valley, end quote.
The next up on our stop is Gwyn. Her full name is Gwynna, but she prefers Gwyn for understandable reasons. She is 15 to 16 years old. An exact age isn't known, but we do know that she is 2 years younger than Belle's. While she is stated to be considering multiple voices, TMC considers her to be of interest to him personally, to the extent that, when Hunt the Strong was seeking out witnesses, he moved Gwyn from her home to another safe place just to prevent access. TMC, what a good guy.
Null stated that Gwyn has aspirations towards connections, and that, quote, Gwyn is not the serious tsundere scold that Femme-presenting people can get lumped into. She is really weird. End quote. Gwyn first appears at the end of the prologue. She's one of the people who also texts under the name Blackout Club HQ.
When Gwyn was asked how the player characters could prove that Bells was really Bells, Gwyn stated that, quote, Ask her about our first kiss. It's a trick. She was 2 years older. We were just friends. We both kissed the back of our hands, but like colliding. Very stupid. End quote.
Bells, when asked, responded with this. Quote, well, it was kind of a joke. I remember I was with Gwyn, I think. She was a little bit younger than me. We were talking about, what were we talking about? We were talking about boys, but that, it was maybe okay to practice kissing with another girl. I'm trying to remember. We played a game, and we would lean toward each other like we were going to kiss, but then we would stick our hands in front of our face at the last second, and we would kiss the back of our hands. And then we would laugh, and we swore we wouldn't tell anyone. It was a secret. End quote.
And moving on, we of course have Bells's mother and father, the Maddie Shaw family. As we said before, her parents are Bryson Shaw and Zaina Maddie Shaw. They both appear only shortly in the prologue, with their appearances bookending the start and end of the supernatural events.
Little is known about their personalities overall. Zaina has an Indian accent, and the surname Madi is primarily sourced from the Middle East and North Africa. While her husband is Caucasian, Zaina is not.
Zaina is the lucid, Bryson is the sleeper, although whether or not his involvement in the cult is consensual on his part is pretty unclear. Despite this, at the end of the prologue, both parents are wearing sleeper elite clothing, apparently contradicting the Madi Shaw inquest transcript part 2, where Dana's mother is referred to as Lucid by Lucid, F sharp, E flat. The Lucid stated, Mel's mother has attained lucidity. She's one of us. What does that mean? Better ask speak as one. That's a joke because they won't answer.
Then there's Stanek. Stanek is an adult woman. She was formerly a host of Dance for Us and now hosts Hunt the Strong unwillingly. She was Bell's teacher. She and Bells reportedly were close, and Stanek taught her some things about the daemons.
Stanek hosted Dance for Us, who was hell-bent on studying the Old Tongue. Dance for Us chose to do the studying through hosts like Stanek, so Stanek had notebooks just filled with Old Tongue info. Imagine waking up from a sound sleep to just a notebook full of Old Tongue gibberish.
Sometimes you just have to choreograph some dance moves in your sleep. It's fine. It's normal. Parasitic yoga, the best way to relieve stress.
After Hunt the Strong took over, Stanek reportedly maintained some measure of autonomy. She was able to bring her Old Tongue studies to the Pact, and the Pact tries to keep an eye on her, but she seems, quote, lost, end quote, now.
Which, speaking of Hunt the Strong, that moves us on to our next target on the list. Colm Ryan, fresh off the set of Lord of the Rings, is an adult male who is affiliated with Chase the Sun, formerly, the Idare, formerly, and now, finally, Hunt the Strong, currently. You might say he's something of a moral floozy. Colm Ryan is tragically still a human and not yet a corpse. He is the brother of Siobhan, and he came to Redacre as part of a plan to help Nayeli and Siobhan have a baby that would be related to both of the parents. Seems kind of nice, but just wait.
It seems nice until it wasn't. When he came to Redacre, he was a host of Chase the Sun, and he seemed to be at least somewhat aware of her as a daemon. He was a sculptor, and he made her symbol out of clay, and it still sits in his room on a makeshift altar. Well, what's left of it, I guess. Colm Ryan was the key to a lot of plot stuff, so we've talked about him in episode 11, The Midnight Report, and episode 16, Freeze Frame. If you'd like some more information, go check it out.
Next, we're talking about the residents of 922 Hoadley, Nayeli and Siobhan. They are both adults, and they both seem to be affiliated with Speak as One. They're a lesbian couple. Nayeli fully buys into the Redacre shit, but Siobhan has a brother who lives outside Redacre and brought him in. That's Colm.
Both are considered to be hosts of Speak as One, but one may be a little less than willing. Frequently, Speak as One talks about the spouses of the people who come to Redacre, and talks as if they're less than faithful to the cause for some reason. But Speak as One says that they're both high saturation, which implies a certain conformity and desire to meet the ideals, even if they may not knowingly be a part of the whole cult hive mind. Nayeli and Siobhan had a child together, which the community refers to solely as the baby. We don't know the baby's name, we don't know the baby's gender, we don't know the baby's age, although it can be implied and assumed that the baby is around somewhere toddlery. And ultimately, we don't even know the baby's ethnicity. While Nayeli has a name that's commonly associated with indigenous communities in Mexico, and Siobhan is implicitly Irish, going by the pictures in the house, white Irish, the baby has a bad tendency of changing ethnicities between photos. There's a lot of questions in that house. Is the baby black? Is the baby indigenous? Is the baby mixed? We don't know. The Watchers don't know either, because they were told to stay the fuck away from the house. So don't try asking them. They can't solve this conundrum.
Moving on from the known to the lesser known. Are we even sure he's still a human? Anyways, we're going to talk about the captive. He's probably an adult, we think, and his affiliations probably with the Aedir, or at least an earlier version of him. But the Captive is a player-given name. He's also known as the Adversary, which was used in early access. However, since the Adversary is also a name for the Aedir, the Captive is now being used, you know, for clarity.
The Captive spoke to players in beta and early access. Most recordings of his visits have been deleted from the internet over time. However, we know that at this time he spoke out loud to players in their minds, much like the daemons do. The Captive would speak to players, and then those players would black out and go to saturation control. He told them to follow his symbol, a glyph that looks like a broken version of the Aedir symbol. Following this path allowed players to escape saturation control.
While much of the Captive is a mystery, we do know some things about him, and he has taught us a few things in turn. For example, we learned about the concept of empowered host, what little we know, as a result of him. Speakers One has confirmed in our known knowledge that the Captive is a human, an old host, and potentially a host of the Aedir. He was, and he is still, trapped in saturation control, and Speakers One isn't entirely sure how he keeps managing to reach the club kids. The reception's supposed to be pretty bad, but I guess his cell phone is just that powerful. At the end of some of his encounters, the Captive has expressed his hope that one day we could help him escape, too. But the club's priorities may be a little on bells first, maybe.
Next is the Cavalry, also known as the Dead Skeptic or the Dead Skeptics. We're not sure if they pluralize it.
They're very vague.
They referred to a member of the Blackout Club as a, quote, junior member, end quote, indicating they are probably universally older than the player characters. They're a strange, mysterious group that talks to kids via text. Their identity on text is usually obscured by a series of random symbols that change every time they send a text. Cavalry is a player-given name. The unknown caller talked about calling in the Cavalry in one of their Dead Man Switch messages, and shortly thereafter, this group began contacting players. They recently sent all players a broadcast on the Boxcar TV, explaining that the club couldn't trust the daemons and encouraging all players to renounce all the daemons.
The Dead Skeptics are the reason why your parents tell you not to answer texts from weird strangers.
Unknown Caller is the only confirmed member of the Dead Skeptics, but interestingly enough, Unknown Caller is also an adult. Unknown Caller is an adult, but the rest of their gender and identity past that are a little up for grabs. It changes depending on who you trust. While they were in control of their own faculties, they were careful not to use pronouns to refer to themselves, and in fact not to give us any information at all, the selfish fucking bastards. However, if we go by other sources, the Aedir says the caller is male, and in their text, the caller refers to themselves often as he. So, if you feel like trusting the Prince of Lies and the Eldritch Abomination that is currently flesh puppeting their body, then he's probably male. But do you really want to trust those characters? Up to you. In terms of information that the Unknown Caller has never given us, which could make up its own beautiful episode of the podcast in itself, we don't even know their name. Unknown Caller is a player-given name, but the sender banner above their messages has consistently read as Unknown Caller. Do they pay their phone bill with that name? Who knows? Probably. They seem the sort.
They were known for their crude language, acerbic personality, and severe disdain towards the voices, whom they referred to as worms and parasites. Although they resented and feared the voices, unknowingly they were a host for Dance For Us. When she died, they were overtaken by Hunt the Strong. Hunt the Strong now uses them as his exclusive host, permanently possessing them. Die For You was able to temporarily break the hold, but as of July 18th, 2020, they remain in Hunt the Strong's thrall.
Speaking of the Cavalry, our next topic is Devin. Devin is another kid who knew Bells, and knew Bells had been contacting someone from out of town. They chose to trust Bells out of all the weird people in town, and they also talk about meeting Bells, specifically at night. It may be reasonable to assume that Devin joined the Blackout Club pre-Bells disappearing. Unfortunately, post, things have definitely changed.
Devin is now associated with the Cavalry, the Dead Skeptics. Although their formal membership is up for grabs, they represent a demographic that is doubtful toward the Voices and that only wishes to engage with players who have fully rejected them all in turn. They were stated to be almost 17 before Bells disappeared. They may be 18 or 19 as of current gameplay.
Devin is one of the relatively few characters in the Blackout Club, other than fan favorite The Voices, that use they-them pronouns. They are also one of the few characters that actively speak to the PCs while appearing throughout the journals. They appear in the 918 Hadley journal entries. The content warning with regards to transphobia deals with these journal entries. While it is relatively mild, it largely exists as a reference to their journey in understanding their gender identity and their struggles with others respecting it.
They talk about wanting to leave Red Acre to find people who live outside the National Radio Quiet Zone. Harper Esposito, their mom, brought out a bunch of pamphlets to help Devin understand their non-binary identity. After doing that, she went missing and went, quote-unquote, into rehab with Chorus.
All communication from that time forward was monitored. Chorus intercepted a letter sent from Harper to Devin's father, Alberto, and phone calls home are limited.
This is one of the many ways you can tell that Red Acre is truly intended to be a utopia for those that live within it. Sure, they're monitoring everything you do, say, and possibly think, but imagine how many jobs they've created in people sorting through that information. Frankly, it's astounding. Their unemployment rate must be amazing. And now to loop back around to the Cavalry. Dead Skeptics is a name that refers to the organization that unknown callers and others have been a part of, but it also refers to one character in specific. This individual, Dead Skeptic, was an adult that appears in the journals. Dead Skeptic is implied to use feminine pronouns by the idea, but it has yet to be confirmed.
Are you confused yet? Good, so are we. She built her own radio tower and used that to contact the Adair's hosts inside Red Acre, presumably from just outside the border. Dead Skeptic served as some kind of messenger between the Adair's Red Acre hosts and an outside group. She was delivering information to them, but told them it was too dangerous to come into the town. Gee, wonder why.
During the course of the game, she wanted to come into Red Acre, and the Adair's hosts wanted to bring her in. Their plan was to allow her to visit, see everything herself, then take it to the world outside and publicize it. However, Speak as One was informed of her activities. They put out a search for her, calling her a dangerous fugitive, and she went into hiding.
She hasn't come up since then. Theoretically, the Adair's host should still have contact with her, but we, the players, haven't heard of her activities in some time. That doesn't mean she's not up to something, though. Remember, if you're curious, you can always ask the Daemons.
Dead Skeptic spoke to Bells and showed a remarkable amount of knowledge about the Voices. You can read her transcripts in the journal in the boxcar under Dead Skeptic Excerpt 9, DS/Bells Chat Transcript, and DS/Gwen Chat Transcript. Dead Skeptic could be taken as a member of the Cavalry given her knowledge, but this is never directly confirmed. Except for the fact that she uses the same name, but, you know, shit's confusing. We're trying to piece it together as we go along.
Now we're on to what is possibly the most important, most beloved, and frankly, the most riveting of all the characters in Red Acre. We're going to talk about The Voice. The Voice is a fascinating character. We know that there are two adults. We know that they follow Speak as One. We know that they are the people that interpret the song for Speak as One followers and call all the shots. We don't know anything else. You're not allowed to ask. Your watcher does not want to tell you. And if you ask anyway, they might cry, or else you might get them killed, or else they might kill you. There's a lot of options here, but all of them perhaps equally result in the same answer. A large, vibrating fuck you from the Voice. They don't want you to know anything about them.
Alternatively, they'll tell you to put out your hands and they'll just take the verbal equivalent to a ruler to them.
Exactly. But doesn't that sense of mystique and that air of mysterious aura just make you want to love them more?
No. Moving on from being cult on Maine, we have the miscellaneous NPCs of Redacre. The Old Tongue children are a group of children mentioned by the Measure Cuts. They were taught Old Tongue as infants and grew up speaking it fluently. It's implied that Nayeli's child, who was taken by Hunter Strong, may be raised in a similar manner to these children.
Then we have Meleagrus Quiroga. Meleagrus Quiroga is involved in the school system, and they ran for mayor of Redacre. Speak as One refers to them as they, implicitly making them one of the non-binary characters in the game, and they are stated to have been influenced by another voice other than Speak as One, as seen in their choice of campaign slogans. They say that they will be a new voice for Redacre. The house with their campaign materials has a teenager's bedroom in it, implying they have at least one child, and the senior Quiroga was brought into Redacre by their spouse.
Now, we've spoken about all the humans of Redacre, but now it's time for us to speak about the humans of the Dreaming Prophet.
And by that, of course, we mean that we're ripping open this red door to reveal the secrets behind Enhanced Horror.
We made a comprehensive EH guide in episode 12, Enhanced Horror in You. While that served us well at the time, we need to make some slight amendments and updates to it. First, we have been given specific advice for new players. If you've never had an enhanced horror encounter before, you are now considered the fancy title of Zero Visit.
Jazz hands! Zero Visit players are encouraged to send prayers to Speak as One or the Aedir. If you recall, these demons are considered text gods because they speak through text on your screen. These gods, being written by the writing team, are the easiest to coordinate on most days, and the direct link to the writing team means that they're most likely to be able to answer all of your questions.
If you have questions for other gods, particularly ones in the Pact, the Aedir may serve as a messenger to answer your questions. However, daemons like In Her Teeth and Laugh Last aren't in the Pact, so the Aedir doesn't have that kind of link with them. It's unclear to us whether he may still overhear those prayers and be able to answer them.
So it's better to send your prayers to the Aedir or Speak as One directly. You don't have to pledge yourself to them, insert cultist spiel here, but they can still talk to you regardless of who you are pledged to, unless you renounce them. If you're Zero Visit, don't renounce them.
At least give them a nice little trial drive before you turn them down completely. Secondly, at this time of recording, which is early August, the world is still grappling with the COVID-19 pandemic. This has understandably caused a lot of chaos everywhere. The main arc of Enhanced Horror was supposed to end in March. However, the pandemic made this more difficult, and the west coast of the United States, which is where Question is primarily based, is currently on lockdown. These restrictions mean that voice actors, technicians, and writers can't meet in the same room to work, and the remote orchestration of real-time voice acting presents many difficulties. The team's doing their best to deal with this, but it's tough, and it means things aren't going to happen exactly as planned.
Safety is top priority for everyone. Enhanced Horror isn't worth risking anyone's life. We should also mentally prepare ourselves as a player base for the fact that this Enhanced Horror experience will end once the team is able to organize that end. This has been a long time coming, but for those of us who aren't actively in the game Discord, it may come as a surprise. We're using our position as a community podcast to spread the word and try to keep everyone in the loop. Thanks for your understanding, and please extend the same understanding towards the Enhanced Horror team and the development team. We have a website with links to all of our guides and resources on it. This includes the newbie guide, the Lorepedia, the player terms lexicon, and more. You can find that at tinyurl.com/thedreamingprophet. And as always, there's an official interaction archive on the Discord. This archives both God Talks and personal dreams. If you have transcripts or videos, please add them to the archive. There is also an option to allow your encounter to be used to support the wiki, which is heavily encouraged. Join the Discord to get involved at discord.gg/theblackoutclub. Blackout Club is made by Question Games. Our transcript and assets are by Lavanya. Audio editing and video is done by me, Astro. Xavier goes bump in the night.